This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this January 18th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. We hope you feel welcome to bring, I want you to feel like you can bring your questions to the table. In a moment, I'll get to one of those, you know, that came in before today's program. But I do really want you to feel comfortable asking any questions, any financial questions. And you can't overstate the importance of adding time into your money management equation. If you're going to manage your own funds, you have to spend time. You've got to gather information not only about the company that you're buying or you think you're going to buy, but the strategy you're going to use, the economic conditions you're in, the economic cycle, the stock market cycle. Are we in a secular bull market, a bear market? Are we in a cyclical bull market and bear market? There's so many things to know. And I will say this. Sometimes us professionals overanalyze. Sometimes it doesn't have to be that hard. But you do have to keep up. Keep up. Too many other companies. Do you know if you go back 20, 30 years ago that most of your tech companies weren't around? Most of them weren't even here. Most of them go out of business. Big ones too, not just little ones. So you have to kind of keep abreast of what's going on. And I hope you use this hour. I hope it's worth spending this hour each day. I take this hour every day and try to supplement some of the information that you're going to need. I try to help you fill in some of the blanks. Justin and I do our best to do that. But of course, you need to ask the questions, and I'm open to any money questions. You can try, you know, I always try to answer them as best I can, give you the most information. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, and the number is 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. My name is Donald in North Carolina. I appreciate all you do for your listeners. My question is hypothetical. If I own 20 ETFs plus stocks and mutual funds, at what point should I set my stop loss orders or trailing stops? And do I do a trailing stop on every equity that I have? I'll listen for the answer on the show. Thank you so much. Bye.
Everybody does a little different, but if you want my opinion, you should have a group of core holdings that you don't have stops on, that you're just going to buy those. And you wait till those become cheap, you buy them, you hold them. Core holdings are big, giant, big blue chip stocks that pay nice dividends. Now, should you have stops on ETFs and stocks on all the others? If you are... It's going to depend on what you think of the market. Do you think the market has a long-term bias to the upside? Upside, not the downside, upside. Long-term bias to that side. Now, if you think we're going to move into an economic slump, recession, or you think that the market's in a bubble that's going to roll over, then you put stops on, you tighten them up. If you feel that we're going to be rolling along for the next few years, well, you can really have very loose stops and not worry about stops. Because what happens if you put too many stops, you don't know where to put them. Many people put stops in, well, to put one 10% from the high. Well, some stocks move 3 and 4% a day, and some stocks barely move a day. That's not necessarily a right way to do it. So it takes a lot of time to understand how and where to use stops. But it depends on you and how you feel about the market, how if you're an investor or a trader, long-term holder or just a swing trader or short-term. What are you? You have to know. Are you a dividend investor? Are you an income investor? Then you wouldn't be so concerned about stops. So it depends on you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, let's see what the market did today. It did fall, down 98 points on the Dow, down 10 points on the S&P, down 10 points on the NASDAQ, 5 points on the S&P. Not much about anything after yesterday's big move, so where the Dow was up 300 points. So what is it going to look like going forward? Well, you ride the ride as long as you can. you're going to probably see more volatility in 2017. That would be my guess. That's going to be my guess. Okay, 888-992-4278. Time to give a call. We'd love to talk to you. Let's take another question from our 24-hour list line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen. Justin, had a question about Instructure, ticker symbol INST. I had a position last year, sold it in October, and ever since then it's been moving sideways, and so I'd love your opinion on if this is a chance to buy another position. I do worry that it's a little overvalued, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
INST is a symbol, Instructure Inc. out of New York, traded on New York Stock Exchange. It's a Salt Lake City, Utah stock. Provides a cloud-based learning management platform for academic institutions and companies worldwide. It's a $1 billion company growing very fast, about 40% a quarter in sales, 40 to 50% a quarter in sales. Problem you have here is it's not going to make money. It's never made money. Sales are growing nicely. It's a billion-dollar company, but the sales are only $43 million last quarter. It's not like, you know, their growth rate is great, but their profits are pretty. There are none. They're going to lose $1.20 for 2017. They're going to lose 86 cents per share in 2018. So there's very little way that you can analyze this company and say, okay, this is the growth rate of its earnings going forward. All you can say is it's got a really good sales growth trajectory right now. A year ago, the stock was selling for $29.50. Today, it's $33.70. I wouldn't be buying it. Not nearly exciting enough for me. Doesn't make any money. I'm not interested in companies that don't make money. Management owns 13%, which is good. And mutual funds own about 80%. So it's pretty fully owned out there. Why is that a bad thing? If mutual funds own 80, management owns 13, that's 93% of all the stocks are owned by either management or mutual funds. So what do you think is going to happen if the mutual funds decide to sell it? There's not a lot of room for them to continue to be buyers. Not really. So doesn't do anything for me. Sorry. Just don't. Today we're going to talk about a kind of risk that may be hidden. A risk that is hidden. Is your mutual fund exposing you to too much risk? And we're talking about hidden risk. And it's an interesting that we're going to talk about CoCos. You know what a CoCo is? Plus, I want to talk about the Fed's beige book that just came out. This one was for the period of November to January. I think we need to talk about that a little bit. I want to talk about mortgage rates. And you see how they kind of spiked? And they're still low, but they kind of spiked. And finally, I want to talk about the cryptocurrency crash. Did you see BitConnect coin? Not Bitcoin, but BitConnect coin. A different cryptocurrency. See what happened to it? This is Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. The market was down. Dow down 98. NASDAQ down 10. The S&P down 5. But that's pretty much a non-starter. That's pretty minuscule stuff. Do you have a long-term investment philosophy? Or are you caught in the trap of investing by the month or the week or the day? Are you going for rapid growth, long-term dividends, stability? What are you looking for? Income? I can help. Formulate approach, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve or Justin, really appreciate the show. My name is Ben, calling from Mississippi. And if I wanted to add bonds to my portfolio, if I wanted to start doing that, would a ETF like BOND or BND, the Vanguard or BIL, something like that, would that be sufficient, or should I go and buy the bonds directly? That was my question. Thank you.
Well, the better way in my mind is buy the bonds directly, but it's more difficult too. But it's better in the sense that you can buy a bond at par, collect all the interest for however long you're holding it, and then it goes back to par, you get your money back. When you buy a bond ETF or bond mutual fund, you buy it at net asset value. That means whatever all the value is of the bonds it's holding. And if interest rates go up, the value, net asset value, will go down. And it doesn't return. It just keeps going down if interest rates keep going up. Now, if you own the actual bond, you hold it for 5 years. If interest rates go up in between there, it will go down in value. But at the end of the 5 years, it'll go back to par. You have a certain amount you know you're going to get back. So you have a better, you can control your losses a lot better, or gains a lot better, knowing that the bonds is going to go back to par and you get your money. So buying the individual bonds in your portfolio, to me, is a better way. Now, the problem is, if you don't have a very big portfolio, you don't have a very good bond relationship with a bond desk, you know, what kind of bonds are going to offer you? Bond dealers don't make a lot of money on small bits of bonds. And the little bits that they have to sell to you, the individual investor, usually aren't the best. They're just not. Okay? You don't get the best prices. That's the difficulty of buying the bonds. So there's nothing wrong with buying a bond ETF or a bond mutual funds. It's just that it has disadvantages that I don't really care for. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk about, let's see, what was our main talking about today? I think it was about, Cocos. Cocos. What's a coco? A coco is a bond. It's a high-yield, high-risk euro bank bond most of the time. Most of the time. And what they are, some big U.S. mutual funds are investing in these high-yield securities that overseas regulators warn may not be suitable for retail investors. So the Europeans are saying, these are way too risky for you individual investors. But our big mutual funds are buying them. They're called contingent convertibles or COCO bonds. Okay, what do they do? There was a recent Wall Street article about this. Contingent convertibles are ending 2017 with near record low yields, warning that regulators should be vigilant when the bonds rally, since the high yields may attract more retail investors. They are very high risk. COCO bonds, known as additional tier one notes, are hybrid capital securities with higher yields than better rated debt from primarily European banks, issued to satisfy regulatory requirements there. But they're very high risk and they're not getting a lot of money for the very high risk that you're taking. And they're in a lot of mutual funds. There are a lot of mutual funds here in the U.S. You probably don't even know it. Most people don't know it. And, you know, I just told you what they are, and you probably don't understand it because it's not very clear. You know, that's just not clear. So I don't know how you're going to avoid it. You can take a look at what's in your balanced income mutual funds or ETFs or your bond mutual fund ETFs. And ask the question, do we have any of these, you call them COCOs, and they won't know what you're talking about, or they'll pretend ignorance, but they're called contingent convertible bonds. Do you have any contingent convertible bonds? And if they do, I would stay away from them at this point. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. We talk a lot about individual stocks and bonds. How about talking about your overall portfolio? You got questions about structuring a balanced mix that may be right for you? Because it gets kind of individual. 888-99-CHART is our phone number.
Hi, Steve. This is John from Fremont. I had a question about business development companies, BDCs. I had never seen anything about this before. You know, I've looked at REITs, looked at dividends, and so on. And so some of these dividends seem to be pretty high, and I'm wondering whether these are like pink sheets or what. I was looking at ARCC. It seems to have a net asset of $7 billion, so pretty large, and a 9% dividend yield, I guess. And then some of them in this sector or whatever, you know, they have like 15% or 14 or 15% yields and stuff. So usually a 10% yield is a red flag for me. Just, you know, the company's getting desperate and may not have the funds. So anyways, if you could tell us a little bit about BDCs and whether they're risky or how would you navigate the waters, that'd be great. Thanks a lot. Love your show. Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, this is Ares Capital Corporation, ARCC, business development company investing in first, second lien senior loans and middle debt or mezzanine debt of U.S. middle market firms. It's a mouthful. What it says is, this company loans money to companies. Okay? It loans money to companies, and many times it takes ownership. Many times it's a high interest loan, but generally these loans are higher risk than just average. So you need to have higher yields. And this one is yielding 9.5%. I've noticed over the years, over the decades, I hate to say that, but that's true, that what happens is these companies do very good in a growing economy. When the economy goes down or starts to stagnate, they tank. They usually do very poorly. So you have to be very, very careful with them when you're buying them. Now this company has not made more than about $1.50 for 10 years. It has made as low as $1.39, which was this year, by the way, the estimate this year, and as high as $1.66 in 10 years. So you have to live on the dividend. The stock trades between $11 and $18 a share. Today is at $16, $15.97. So that you buy this for the dividend, and you just watch out for the next recession. Now, a year ago, it was selling for like, right there about $15, $15.10 almost a year ago. Let me see if that's right. My computer messed up here. My charting program kind of messed up here. Let me get it. Well, still, same truth. About $15.10 within the last year, and the high is about $16.40. Today it's at 16. There you go. That's the range. It's probably going to stay there. So it's not a bad deal. They have a little, you know, they do carry debt because they borrow money and lend money, but this one is not too overly leveraged. And recent three quarters sales have done quite well, even though earnings have kind of flattened. Well, you'll say, well, why is that? Why are the earnings going down and sales going up? Well, because maybe they borrow more money to lend. And they haven't got the money returned yet. That kind of thing. Let's go to Elizabeth, who lives in San Jose. How you doing, Elizabeth?
Hi, I'm doing pretty good.
Thank you for the call.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just have a quick question. I opened a Roth IRA with TD Ameritrade.
Uh-huh.
So I just started putting money in, and they won't really guide you to...
Nope.
Where your money should go. So how do I know where I should put it?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. Can I ask one question? Elizabeth, how old are you? Are you young or are you old? Are you middle-aged?
Oh, I'm middle-aged.
Okay. So you have plenty of time. So the easiest way to invest is buy an index fund and do indexing. And the easiest way to buy the S&P 500 is to go and buy SPY, which is an ETF for the S&P 500. So you can buy, you can go buy as many shares as you can in the SPY, and then you own all the S&P 500, okay? So, but don't buy it all at one time. I don't know how much money you have in there, but you might want to, what we call dollar cost average, do a little bit this today, another little bit 2 weeks from now, and then a little bit 2 weeks after that. Depending on how much money, you can dollar cost average over several months. In case the market goes down, then you keep buying if the market goes down. You see? So that would probably be the easiest way. Do a dollar cost average into an index if you don't have much more knowledge than just that you know you want to be in the market. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Thank you for the call. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, the worst funds for your 401k. That's one of our topics on the next Invest Talk. But what's your topic today? My direct line between 4 and 5 Pacific time is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, good reason number 5 for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Steve says that many portfolios he looks at are weighted in just one or two sectors. A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio. Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future. And if you'd like, a KPP financial program that fits your goals and your life situation. There's never a cost for InvestTalk listeners and no sales pitch or obligation of any kind ever. To schedule your one-on-one conversation with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review, or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. And now let's continue with the podcast. This is Invest Talk, and we're glad you're here today. A quick quiz. Let's say the market has been in the dumps for months. What's your smartest move? A, pull all your money out. You don't want to lose any more. B, leave your accounts alone and stop making further contributions. Or C, buy while stocks are cheap. That's the kind of question you could talk to Steve about right now. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Nick in Hayward. How are you doing, Nick?
Fine, sir. Fine, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a different kind of a question today. I'm wondering, there's brokerage houses. They have like incentive programs and rebates. If you bring in a whole bunch of money, they give you more money, and if it's a little bit less. I want to know how they make money. If I have, let's say, they get an account with $10 million in portfolio.
Okay.
How do they make more money like that?
Okay, that's a very good question. And actually very easy to answer, but it's a very good question because most people probably don't know. The brokerage houses out there, they when they take in your money and it's held in your portfolio, they make money several ways. Usually, money is not all invested. So that cash that you have, they lend it out. They lend out.
Okay.
Also, if you open up an account that's called a margin account, they even lend out your stock. They lend your stocks out for about 8%. If someone else wants to short the stock that you, then they'll borrow the stock out of your portfolio. Even though it still show up in your portfolio, you have agreed in that fine print to let them borrow the stock and lend it out and charge people for that. Other people, not you.
Okay.
They also make money. The bigger their account, they make a lot of money just because they have a heft. The bigger they are, the more they can borrow money and make money on the money they lend out. So there's many ways that they make money. Also, let's say you put in an order. Let's say you put in an order to buy 1,000 shares of Apple. Well, they also, if you put just a market order, they will then sell you their own shares because they probably own it. And they can make the spread, and I don't know if I want to get into the spread, but they make the spread on what they buy and sell inside your portfolio. It's a few. It's usually a few pennies on every trade, but boy, the bigger the account, the more those pennies add up.
I see. So it's like a bank, more or less.
Oh yeah, it is. It is a bank. it's a
bank.
Commercial bank. Yeah, it's a bank. That's how they do it.
That's nice to know.
Thanks, Nick. Yeah. Appreciate the call. And we're going to go to our favorite guy from Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good. I appreciate the call.
Sure. I was just wondering about CenturyLink. They look like they've based a little bit. I was thinking about picking it up for the dividend.
Okay.
I'm just wondering about the debt since the interest rates are going up. Just wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, you're looking at the right stuff. CenturyLink, Inc. is provides local exchange, long-distance network access, and broadband services to rural communities in 37 different states. They make money. They're going to make $1.66 in 2017 when they finally give us their numbers. But they're going to go only make $1.25 next year. Last year, 2016, they made $2.45. So 30% fall year over year, and then another 25% next year fall. And sales are going down 4-7% per quarter. So they're in the low PE ratio. They deserve a low PE. Now, the question is, can they keep up the 12% yield that you're looking at? And I have a feeling that they're not going to be able to do that. I will say this, right at this price, you have at least one insider buying at this price, $17.34. Just happened a month or so ago. Okay, so yeah. Insiders.
Yeah, I think they just purchased another company. I forgot the name of it, though. They merged with another major telecom, I believe.
Well, recently they received a 5-year contract from Commonwealth PA to provide data networking. So that's not a merger. That's just a big contract. I don't know. I don't see it right here. Art, I can't see everything because I just don't have it.
Yeah, I think they just finalized a deal with another telecom.
Yeah, but think about this. It's a $17 stock. They're paying 12% dividend yield, but they only make $1.25. So that means they're going to pay out about $1.90, but they're only making $1.25. But cash flow is $8 a share. So the cash flow, they could do it. They could still pay 12. They could. But they also have lots of debt. So
do you think they'll cut the dividend then?
That's my suspicion, yeah. I think they might, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Art. Appreciate the call.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. That was CenturyLink. CTL is a simple. CTL. Okay, the Fed Basebook comes out every, I don't know, about 6 weeks or something. There's no real, it's not like a month-to-month-to-month schedule. It's just not. But this Basebook comes out, and it's a reading by the 12 Federal Reserve districts of what's going on economically in their district. Okay? So the most recent one just came out. And all of them said we have modest to moderate growth. And that's the same that they've been saying for a long time. So they're not seeing any pickup like most others are saying. Even though GDP numbers are increasing, they're not saying they see that. They see tightness in all sectors of the labor market of skilled workers, tightness in the labor market. Why is that important? Kind of tells you there might see some inflation. They in 2018, their outlook is optimistic for the economy, but real estate has stalled. That's what they're saying. Real estate has stalled. They see at this time, even though there's tightness in the labor market, they see no broad trend to raise wages yet. So isn't that interesting? Kind of like, well, wait a minute. If it's tightness in the labor market, why don't you see a broad trend in raising wages? But remember, this is the Basebook. They go out and ask corporations in their districts. They take surveys. They're asking. They're trying to find out what's happening. Now, the Fed meets in 2 weeks. 2 weeks. The Federal Reserve meets in 2 weeks. And they have said they're going to raise rates 2, 3, 4 times this year. The average is 3. That's what everybody's saying. But they're probably not going to raise rates in the next meeting. More than likely, it'll be the meeting after that, which I think is like at the beginning of March. So I'm just reporting the news. That's what the Fed is saying. They're seeing steady, moderate pace of growth for our economy. Now, would you give up some possible return on your investments if you didn't have to worry so much about suffering severe losses? So would you give up possible returns if you didn't have to worry about losses, ever? And that's a question you need to ask yourself. The answer may depend on your age and just suffer how much you have saved for retirement. Maybe you have plenty, so you don't need to take risks. It's a question I try to help you answer when you visit our one-to-one for my retirement reviews. We're filling up pretty fast in our San Jose meeting on February 7th. I'll be in San Jose on February 7th. I think I only have a couple slots left. Now, if you'd like to join me, please visit InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
On your next visit to InvestTalk.com, visit our Income Marketplace, where you'll see important financial stories like this. The fall of bonds. The bond market has been referred to as a leading indicator for stocks. And this week, bond prices have fallen hard with yields rising sharply. Read more about this story on InvestTalk.com. For this and other important stories, look for the InvestTalk tab on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Let's go to Sonny in Fremont. How are you doing, Sonny?
Hi, good, Steve. Thank you for taking the call.
Thank you.
I have a question on financial stocks in general. Considering Feds will raise rates three times this year, maybe four, is this a good time to buy financials like J.P. Morgan or Bank of America?
It's not a bad time because as long as the rates, Sonny, go up slowly, rates go up slowly, it's good for banks. It's if the rates get too high or spike up, then the banks suffer because they can't make loans, right? They can't. If the rates go up slowly, the economy continues to grow, this is a good environment for commercial banks. It's a good environment. They make loans. That's how they make their money. If the stock market goes up, you know, that's how they make money. So, yeah, it's not a bad time. Now you just got to make sure you don't overpay for a bank. But yeah, it's a good time to be in financial banking stocks. I do.
Which one do you think is better pick, Bank of America or J.P. Morgan?
Well, I really can't do a comparison on air because that means I have to pull up both at the same time, and I can't. Bank of America is very different than J.P. Morgan. Bank of America is more of a residential banking company, and J.P. Morgan is more of a commercial banking company. So they're two different kinds of banks. In general, I'd probably pick J.P. Morgan. But that's only because I like commercial banks better than residential banks. And that I might be just prejudiced that way, you know. So I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Okay, why mortgages? Have you seen the mortgage rates? They spiked. 8-month high last week or this week. 30-year fixed mortgage rate went to 4.04, up from 3.99 last week. Now, you're going to say, well, that's not very much. But in this realm, that's a lot in a one-week period. So you can buy a 30-year fixed mortgage, you're going to pay a little over 4%. Well, that's still not a lot. You know what's going to be interesting? The younger generations are going to see 5% and 6% mortgage rates as super high. And the older generation, me, look at 5% and 6% mortgage rate as, oh, that's still pretty low. Because of our time frames. It's always the same. Our time frames go back, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And from that point on, what interest mortgage rates were. And then mortgage rates were 12% or so, some higher, some lower, depending on what time frame you want. But since then, they've been going down up until recently. They've still been pretty low. 3.5%, 4%, really low. My first mortgage rate was in 75, 76, and I paid 12.25, and I thought I got a cheap rate. 30-year fixed, 12.25. So, oh, what a cheap rate. So you get jaundiced to your own personal experience. So in actuality, if mortgage rates go to 5 to 6%, that would be a very difficult environment because the millennials and the younger generation who are borrowing the money at that high rate, they're going to say it's expensive because they're used to 3 to 4% for a number of years now. So you can see, you know, it goes 4.5, 5. That means housing will start to suffer at, you know, 4.5, 5% mortgage rate. The housing market's going to suffer. So you got to be in context, because that is a high rate in today's environment, the last 10 years, 15 years. Tops on our list of priorities is your call. You know that. Bring your questions to us anytime you want, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin or Steve. I have a question about TIPS, Treasury Inflation-Protected Securities. I just wanted to know what they are, how to buy them, and if now is a good time to buy them with inflation expected to increase. Looking forward to hearing the answer to that question. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, Treasury Inflation-Protected Bonds. They are bonds. Okay, Treasury means TIPS. Treasury Inflation-Protected means it is a bond by the U.S. government. And there's an ETF, exchange-traded fund, TIP. And that is an ETF, the exchange-traded fund, seeking performance corresponding to the Barclays U.S. Treasury Inflation-Protected Securities Index. So that's one way you can buy it. You can buy the whole index, TIP. You can also buy Treasury Inflation-Protected Bonds directly from the Treasury using a system called Treasury Direct. Okay, so you can buy them directly. You can sell them out of your checking account. They take the money out, wire the money out of your account. They put in a bond in your account. There you go. You hold it till maturity or as long as you want it and try to sell it. That's another way you can buy it. And, of course, you can buy mutual funds that specialize in it. Should you buy it? Well, Treasury Inflation-Protected bonds work this way. They have a flat rate of return. It might be like 0.5% a year, you know, 0.5. Then they add the inflation rate. So if inflation rate's, you know, gone up 0.5%, they'll add 0.5% to that flat rate. They revalue that every 6 months. So if inflation continues to rise, they keep continuing to rise your yield. You get more and more money. TIPS, the ETF, pays currently right now 2.1% yield. So inflation picks up, these things will be very, very good protecting you against inflation, losing money against inflation. And since they're not in the stock market, they will also reduce your risk of all your exposure to the stock market. You can hedge against the stock market by buying this. You listen to Invest Talk. Glad you spent some time with me today. I do appreciate it. I know you're interested in doing a better job of managing your money. Do you have a question? The clock is ticking. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Tanya in San Francisco. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering about what you think about Facebook stock.
Well, to be honest, I've never been a big fan of Facebook, and probably I've been wrong this whole time. Facebook provides a platform for enabling members to stay connected with friends and family via Facebook.com. They're making money. They're making quite a bit of money. They're going to make $5.88 this year, then $6.72 next year. Their sales growth is in the 40 to 50% per quarter, and the P is not that out of line. It's only 34. Well, compare that with the growth of earnings and sales. That's not bad. That's not bad at all. So from a fundamental point of view, it's a pretty good buy right here. Pretty good. Every time it's gone to this 50-day moving average, it has bounced up. And it came down to the 50-day moving average and is right near where it is today. So this would be a buy point if you wanted to buy it, Tanya. Now, you have to ask me why.
Yes.
Why am I not a fan? Why? Well, because I don't like the way how they make money. I remember, this is Facebook. You go onto Facebook to talk to friends or chat between friends. You know what it is. Everybody knows what it is. And you don't go there to look at commercials, click on websites, have pop-ups, and that's how they're making their money. They're putting their ads in there. Now, I haven't looked at it in a while. Maybe they've changed a little bit, but on how they make money. But unlike Google, which I like Google's much better methodology of making money. Google, you actually go search for something, and they, you know, you're paying the companies who put themselves first or whatever, they're paying for that, and you're actually looking. But Facebook, you're just trying to, you know, chat with your friends, and they keep butting in with their ads. And I don't like that business model. That's why I'm prejudiced, Tonya. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you for the call, though.
Thank you.
Thank you. Doesn't mean you shouldn't own it. It's just that I'm prejudiced. I'm also prejudiced against airlines. Why am I prejudiced against airlines? I don't like airlines. I'll have you know, though, I bought a couple and sold a couple last year, so it's not like I avoided. It's just that, you know, if I see the opportunity, fine. But I don't like their business model. Airlines, because they're so expensive. Their planes, they're subject to high spikes in gasoline for their stupid airplanes. If the seat is empty, the inventory is zero. That's their inventory, seats. So if they don't fill them, it goes to zero. You can't even sell it at a discount if no one sits there. Lots of unions. There's a reason why I don't like them. Okay, enough of that. Crypto crash. Did you see what BitConnect coin did? Not Bitcoin. BitConnect coin. It fell 90% in one day. A month or so ago, it was selling for about $500 per coin. Now it's like six. They shut down the exchange because they had trouble with a couple of states. This is called BitConnect coin. Now, you know, Bitcoin itself is down like, what, 30% in a month? Okay, the reason why I'm bringing this up, I'm just trying to give you, you know, they had so many people all in love with this, you know, a month or so ago, and it was everywhere in the news how wonderful this thing is. I want you to just understand how volatile these things can be. Now, the reason why BitConnect coin did fall is because Texas and North Carolina didn't like them. Now, just this week, South Korea outlawed them, or at least, quote unquote, that's what they say they were going to do. China actually did outlaw cryptocurrencies. Don't think about it. If things are going to be bought and sold in Ether currencies, Ether, out there in the ether, governments around the world are not going to be happy because they want their taxes. So it's not going to be left alone. It's just not. So just be aware of the dangers that you're dealing with. Time to wrap it up. A reminder, I do have an opening for my day in San Jose, February 7th. I'll be there for individual retirement reviews. To save that remaining hour, it's about all I got left. I'm getting kind of tight. Go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Justin Klein, myself, and the whole KPP family, thank you for spending your time with us today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.